Hey, what's up, guys? It's Booker T, the five-time champion. You're listening to the Gurick Report podcast with Steve Gurick and Frank D. Now, can't you dig it, sucker?
Welcome to a very special edition of the Gurick Report podcast, the podcast that tells it like it is. I am Steve Gurick of Gurwick.net. That's G-E-R-W-E-C-K.net. And today, Frank D., we welcome a very special guest, a WWE Hall of Famer.
He's a WWE Hall of Famer. He is a multiple-time World Heavyweight Champion. He's a champion everywhere he's gone. The one, the only, Booker T. Join us today. How you doing, Booker?
Hey, man. I'm doing real good, man.
Great to have you on, Booker. We had you on a couple of years ago on the Gurick website, G-E-R-W-E-C-K.net. Appreciate your time today. I know you're very busy. Obviously, this is SummerSlam week, the big event coming up this weekend, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you there on the WWE Network. Can you quickly update us on your health? I know you had, a shoulder injury, and I saw an interesting tweet a couple of days ago where you said the spinner Rooney is essentially retired, so update us how you're doing physically these days.
Actually, it's my elbow. You know, I had a bursitis. It kind of like erupted on me. I went and got a cortisone shot in it to, you know, get it fixed. It made it a lot worse. And they had to actually go in there and, you know, clean it out and whatnot and put me on antibiotics, you know. So I was in the hospital for a couple of days, you know. And it's the elbow that I use for the spinneroonie, you know. A lot of when you look at the spinneroonie, you really can't tell that I use my elbow. But and actually, personally, honestly, I didn't really realize I used my elbow as much as I did until I did it at the Hall of Fame on that hardwood floor. And I was like, ow, that hurt. You know what I mean? Where'd that come from, you know? So it's just something that's been nagging me for a long time. Will I ever do the spinneroonie again? Of course I will, you know what I mean? But I just don't want people to, you know, expect to see the spinneroonie every time they see Booker T.
I don't know. What is your official status? Are you officially retired? Are you open to coming back and doing one more match in WWE? I mean, what is your status?
I mean, I'm officially retired. I mean, I'm officially retired. I mean, but I can come back and have one more match. That's what wrestlers do, you know what I mean? If I'm in shape enough to do it, you know, if I feel comfortable enough to go out there and do it where I'm not going to, you know, put, you know, the guy that I'm working with in jeopardy or anything, or myself, you know. So it's one of those things, you know. I mean, the clock is ticking as far as, you know, how willing I will be to get in the ring, you know what I mean? But right now I feel good, but I am officially retired. And I love it.
How you doing physically? How's the body holding up, all the bumps over the years? How you doing overall?
You know, I mean, I got my, you know, no wrestler leaves the business unscathed. You know, I mean, my knees hurt, you know, hurt sometime, you know, my back hurts sometime, you know. But it did stop me from getting in the gym and training every day, you know. It didn't stop me from playing 18 holes of golf, you know. It didn't stop me from playing with my kids, you know what I mean, taking a bike ride around the block, you know what I mean. I've been in relatively good shape for 51 years old and been, you know, in the business for, you know, 25 plus years, you know. But when I started the business, I had never played sports before, so I think my body was like a virgin to getting hit or anything like that.
Booker, can you give us an update on what you're doing currently right now with your Reality of Wrestling?
Oh, man, my Reality of Wrestling, I'm just trying to take it to the next level, but we're just trying to take it at a slow pace. We're on CW39 here in Houston, Texas at 11 a.m. in the morning. And, you know, I want to take it, I want to be pretty much just cover Texas. I want my own territory. I want to be able to, you know, be the AAA, you know, for professional wrestling. WWE is always going to be scouting talent. It's just about honing that talent and getting them ready for, you know, to actually be able to go to that next level. One of my students, Brendan Williams, he played for the Houston Texans. He just got signed with WWE. He was only with me for, you know, less than a year. And that's what my company is about. It's not about keeping the talent there. It's about grooming them, you know, giving them a show place to actually go out there and, you know, display their talent and then, you know, see how good they are and then go try out and See if you could make it to the next level. Go around the world, live that dream just like I did. More important than anything, but I really want to produce, you know, one of the best shows you're possibly going to see outside of WWE. We're not competition or anything like that for WWE. We're, like I said, we're just an alternative as well as, you know, like I said, a forum system. More than anything, you know, my wrestlers are all young kids. My champion is 20 years old. He's been with me since he was 16 years old, you know, so I try to catch them really when they're really young. So by the time they, you know, get 20 years old, they're veterans by that time. You know, they're grown men in the ring, you know, so it's awesome.
And if anybody out there listening to our show right now wanted to, say, go to your school, how would they be able to do that?
Go to realitywrestling.com. You know, get all the information, or just call 281-993-5321 and we'll hook you up. You know, I mean, our school is open pretty much Monday through Friday, actually on Saturdays as well sometime. We got 22,000 square foot arena, as well as our school is connected to it also. We're connected to World Gym, so you can get a good workout at the same time. And you know, it's awesome. You know, 11 years now we've had our wrestling school, and it's just one of those things where we're just going to keep plugging and keep plugging, going to keep buying more cameras, going to keep getting more equipment, trying to keep making our production value go up. And, you know, before it's over with, you know, we could be the next, you know, Tyler Perry of professional wrestling.
Yeah, I feel you on that one, definitely. Now, Booker, you started off in Global with Stevie Ray. You guys were the Ebony Experience. And I wanted to ask you, because I know eventually you guys got into WCW because of Sid Vicious. But was there any interest at all at this time from the WWF?
It was always interest. You know, when we got to the WCW. But it wasn't a question or anything like that. We were always happy with WCW. WCW treated us very, very well monetarily. Wise, you know, we became 10-time, you know, tag team champions, you know, the most anybody ever did in WCW. So, Harlem Heat, we got treated very well, you know, but, it was always that thought in the back of the head, you know, maybe, going to WWF in one day, you know, but, it wasn't on the radar at that time. And then my brother, eventually, you know, wanted to step away from the business when he had a little girl. I think that's the only reason, you know, we didn't go to WWE and do it there.
And I remember back in the day, because I was a kid watching you guys in WCW. One day I saw you guys come out with Sherry Martel. So how did that come about? How did the Harlem Heat sister Sherry dynamic come into play?
You know, actually, Hulk Hogan was a big part as far as making that all happen. You know, he was one of the guys who was like, you know, hey guys, you know, at that time, WCW was looking for a tag team to push, and it was looking pretty much every place other than, you know, Harlem Heat, you know. And, you know, Hulk was like, hey, guys, y'all got your tag team right here. These are your guys, you know. I mean, they was just figuring out what they could do with us to, you know, add a little bit of spice to it, you know, so they wanted to give us a manager. So they went through a whole crop of managers, you know, and then, you know, finally, you know, they, you know, let Sherry, you know, pretty much, you know, try to spot out for a second. And we knew immediately that was going to be the you know, the legitimizer for Harlem Heat as far as making us, you know, worldwide, you know, names. You know, Sherry had been with, you know, great names, you know, and every great name she had been with had been champion. And we knew if we could get with Sherry Martel, I don't know what Charmel was. As soon as I say we get with Sherry Martel, we knew we was going to be, you know, on our way, especially in the South. You know, two black guys with a white woman, you know, that's going to just be fire everywhere we go. It's going to be like gasoline in our back pocket. You know, we started riots in a lot of places we went to, you know, because it was just such an awesome dynamic. It was great, you know, to be able to work with Sherry and, you know, learn so much from Sherry at the same time. You know, it was a great ride, you know, being Harlem Heat.
And since you're talking about, you know, the whole South dynamic and everything, I wanted to ask you about Sturgis. You guys will go out there to Sturgis, South Dakota for, you know, Road Wild. How was that for you guys? Probably the only, you know, black guys on the card. I mean, how was that? Because I remember watching the 1996 event that they did there, and it looked like a lot of those bikers out there wanted you and Steve Ray for a shoot. So how was that whole atmosphere out there in Sturgis?
Yeah, Sturgis was actually awesome. Actually, we were perhaps the only two black guys in Sturgis, South Dakota at that time. My brother was well versed, you know what I mean, and you know, he could pretty much get along with anybody. My brother was a biker, you know, he's a hot rod guy, you know what I mean. He listened to all kind of music. He's well, you know, knowledgeable about anything. You know what I mean? So I always had that anchor right there in my back. I was out of place, of course, but my brother, he wasn't. So, you know, I could pretty much piggyback off of him. But as far as, us going out there and performing, it was a great platform, you know, for us to go out there and do our stuff. You know, we wasn't, you know, like the song said, you know, we ain't never scared. You know, to go out create some havoc. You know what I mean? No matter how many bikers were out there, you know, me and my brother actually in the middle of it, we felt like we could whoop them all.
Right.
You know, we really did. You know what I mean? And we literally carried that everywhere we went. You know, I think, you know, when people, like you say, looked at Harlem Heat, I think that's why we were well respected as a tag team, even though we were only a tag team in WCW, you know, in global, you know, because when people saw me and my brother, they really saw two legitimate guys that would beat you up, you know, if you crossed them, you know, if you crossed paths with them. And that's what was good about it. You know what I mean? We was in a perfect environment, you know, with a bunch of bikers and two black guys and a white woman. So it worked in the Steiner brothers, two all-American guys still riding in on their Harleys, you know. So for me, it was perfect. It was one of my best pay-per-views, one of my most memorable pay-per-views I've ever been a part of.
Now, you can be biased, obviously, but where do you think Harlem Heat ranks in the annals of some of the greatest tag teams? Obviously, LOD, Hart Foundation, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, etc. I certainly would expect you to be, put yourself over. But where do you think Harlem Heat ranks among those teams?
You know, I feel like we definitely top five. You know, I can't, you know, say, you know, we're the number one tag team out there, you know, because me and my brother, we was huge fans of the, you know, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, you know. The huge, fans of those guys back in the day, you know, and, you know, Ron Simmons, Butch Reed, you know, I mean, the Road Warriors, I mean, you know, I mean, come on, I mean, just so many of them, there were so many great, I mean, the Nasty Boys, let's give those guys their props, you know, I mean, there's so many great tag teams out there that came up back in the day. That's what was so different back then, you know, when guys came up, they were like partners from the beginning, you know what I mean? Now they just put guys together, but we were truly tag teams back then. It was so many great, great tag teams. But I feel like we were top five of all time in tag team wrestling. That's just as far as the rankings go. We would have beat them all in a real fight.
Right, no doubt.
That's a shoot.
Maybe except for being in the Barbarian.
Yeah.
That would have been a good fight. I had to retract that.
But I wanted to ask you, since we're talking about the tag teams, you know, you guys wrestled the Outsiders at Halloween Havoc 96. And you guys were pretty much, until Hall and Nash came in there, you guys were the dominant tag team in WCW. I mean, you guys wrestled, you know, the Road Warriors, you wrestled Sting and Luger, you know, the Steiner Brothers. I mean, classic battles there. But you wrestled Hall and Nash at Halloween Havoc 96, and then you dropped the tag belts to them, and you never got a rematch. And after that, Harlem Heat kind of, you know, went down a ladder a little bit. You were feuding with the amazing French Canadians. Why didn't Harlem Heat ever get that rematch with the Outsiders?
You know, I'm working in a business and, you know, working with a company where guys come in and they got creative control in their contracts to do whatever they want to do. You got to go along with the flow, you know. I was making a lot of money to go along with the flow. And, you know, for me, it's never been about me. You know what I mean? It really hasn't. You know what I mean? The wrestling thing has always been just a job, you know, for me. It's always just been a mean of support for my family. And that's why I'm still here. That's why I'm still there. That's why I still work for WWE, because I've never looked at myself like, you know, people look at me. You know, it's all been about going out there and putting in the work. You know, I tell my students, you know, on our shows, you got a role to go out there and play. You know, play your role. And that's the only role that you need to play for that night. If you play that role, the show will come together and it'll all look great. You know, so I've always been, you know, a role player, you know, and but I've always known how talented I was at the same time.
And Booker, you know, eventually you went into singles competition and you won the WCW TV championship, the first black WCW television champion. You beat the Disco Inferno on Nitro in 1997.
Oh, that's some history. I mean, awesome. I didn't even know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
First black TV champion. You know what? You know, it was awesome. You know, I slipped on a banana peel and won the title on that night. I wasn't even supposed to win it, you know, because Rick Martel was, you know, only reason I got was in that match that night was because Rick Martel forgot his boots at home. And
Oh wow!
It was like, hey, well, let's get the belt off Disco, and let's, you know, we need to get it off Disco because ratings going down. I'm just playing. Disco's a good friend of mine. but they ended up putting the belt on me, and I knew that was a huge mistake. You know what I mean? For a lot of guys, you know, on the roster, I knew it was a huge mistake for the company because I say, man, they're never going to get the title back. You know, they're never going to get it off me. I'm going to go out and do stuff that people never seen before from an in-ring wrestling perspective, you know, and that's what I did. And television champion literally sparked my singles career. And it was all due to, you know, just having, you know, a break. Like I say, slipping on a banana peel and won a championship. And, you know, six times later, you know, I was championship, you know, I was TV championship, like every, you know, throughout, you know, my whole, you know, career at that time until I dropped it and moved on and moved up, you know, so it was awesome, you know, to be on Saturday night television every night, you know, representing, you know, TV championship, defending the title, you know, like no other television champion had ever did it before, you know, so it was awesome, you know, to actually put myself out there on the line just to see how good I really was.
And did you think after winning the TV championship, do you think that, you know, something, I could be the WCW World Heavyweight Champion, I could actually carry this company. Did that come into your mind at all? Simply because you have, you know, guys on the roster at this time. You have the NWO angle going on. Hogan is dominating the heavyweight title scene. You got the Luger, Sting, and all these other guys.
No. I never thought about being a heavyweight champion until it happened. I never thought about it at all until it happened, until the night it actually happened. I never really put myself in that role right there. I never thought, you know, it would ever happen for me in WCW, a company in the South, at all. But my thing was, I always just wanted to be the best wrestler. I just wanted to be the best performer. I just wanted to go out and steal the show every night. You know, God rest his soul, Dusty Rhodes. You know, I went out to work, you know, like first match one night, you know, and, you know, I came back through the curtain and Dusty Rhodes said, they won't put you on first no more. And I was like, yeah, man, you know, I know I'm doing something right. You know, because I want to be the best, and you don't put the best first, you put the best last. And I knew it was going to be an uphill battle to work my way to that position if it was to ever happen. But I knew going out there and being the best for the fans, you know, I was still going to be the champ no matter what.
Now, you did become the champion at Bash at the Beach 2000. We all know that whole night happened there. Was there any talk prior to that event of Booker T becoming the world champion for WCW?
I knew a couple of days before that, you know, they were leaning my way. The night that it happened, you know, and the chaos and whatnot, you know, I had to wrestle earlier that night. So I really, I didn't think it was ever going to happen, you know, because politics was really, really thick in the company at that time. And I never played politics. I never was one of those guys to go and hang out and ask the, you know, guys, hey, what are we doing here? Wow, you know, where's this going? You know, I was just one of those guys, I was just a soldier, and, you know, you give me the ball, I'm going to try to score for you, you know. So I just let everything play out, you know, and I got the word a couple of minutes before, you know, it was going out that, yeah, it was going to become the world heavyweight champion. And, you know, I really didn't have time to think about it or anything like that because I had to think about performing. And that's the only thing I really was thinking about was sucking it up to go out and have another match that night and make it great, you know, and not the title, not winning the championship, you know, just the match. And it just worked out. I became heavyweight champ. The fans, they accepted me, you know, and that was one of the things I always wondered, you know, would the fans accept the black heavyweight champion again after Ron Simmons? You know, even Ron Simmons, you know, they didn't really give him a just due and let him defend the championship or even work in the main event when, you know, when he had the title. You know what I mean? Somebody, Ric Flair, would work in the main event, you know what I mean? You know, so it was just, it was a surreal experience, you know, to say, go to my hotel room and say, wow, I'm the heavyweight champion, you know. Pretty cool.
Hey, Booker, when did you realize WCW was going to go under? You had so many weeks where Nitro was dominating Raw, and, I mean, at one point it looked like WWF was on the verge of collapsing. They stole all the, you know, the major superstars. Bret Hart jumped over. But at some point, the ship started to sink. And at what point did you realize that this ship was going to sink, it was not going to make it, and ultimately WWF would win the war?
Well, I mean, I could see it happening. I got injured. I had a knee injury, and I was off, and had surgery on it, and I was pretty healed, but I was off for a few months, and it was like, hey, this is good. You can stay at home for a few more months, and I was sitting at home watching the show. I was like, no, this is not good. You know, I could just see the direction it was going. And then I said, no, I got to come back to work. So I called Nick Bischoff and said, hey, man, I need to get back to work. I need to get back to work now. You know, so I came back to work. And at that time, you just didn't know who was running the company. You know, one week, you know, one guy would be in charge. The next week, that guy wouldn't even be there, and somebody else would be in charge. The next week, you ask, hey, you know, who did I talk to? And no one knew who to talk to. You know what I mean? So it was really in chaos. We were spending a whole lot of money at that time as well. And I just did not think that we would be able to sustain spending somebody else's money for too much longer without them realizing that their money is being spent, you know, just, you know, in a totally the wrong way. Just like having a pay-per-view like at Sturgis where no tickets were sold. It was just a free pay-per-view. You know what I mean? Guys were partying. You know, upper echelon guys as well. You know what I mean? The boss, you know what I mean, out there hanging out. So I could see the company, when the boss started hanging out with the guys, the talent, it's a problem. You know what I mean? So I could see the writing on the wall, and I just wanted to be prepared for it more than anything. I saw a lot of guys around there. They were making a lot of money, but they literally were getting so soft. They were just getting so lazy. They just did not care about the fans at all, you know. So I say, okay, let me put myself in a good position. So when you know, when the storm come, you know, I'll be ready.
And the storm did come, Booker, because WWE eventually bought WCW, and the final Nitro, you wrestled Scott Steiner to become the final WCW World and United States Champion. Now, the question I have about that is that night was the last Nitro. What's the feeling right there in the locker room? What's the feeling for you? Were you already talking to WWE prior to this?
I hadn't talked to anybody in WWE at that time. Before the night of the, you know, the big buyout, you know, and then Shane McMahon came walking in the locker room, you know, with all of their guys, you know, so taking over, you know, it was a huge takeover, you know, it was actually kind of awesome, you know, in a way, you know, a lot of guys were losing their jobs that night as well, you know, but for me, I'm a survivalist, you know, I know how to, you know, adapt to my environment. You know, no matter what it has been throughout my life, you know what I mean? So I just felt like that was another moment where I was going to have to adapt and move on. I knew I was talented. I knew WWE was going to pick me up. I knew I was going to, you know, go on to, you know, do great things. But I knew it was going to be a different way of life for me. I knew I had to go out there and prove myself all over again, you know, with some guys that, you know, perhaps didn't want me in their locker room, you know what I mean? So, but I was willing to go out there and show those guys that I was willing to go out there and be a part of the team, not just come over there and say, hey, I'm Booker T, I'm a star, I'm the, you know, four-time heavyweight champion, y'all got to accept me as that, you know what I mean? I left all my baggage behind, you know, when I went to WWE, as well as I left a lot of money behind because I still had a contract with WCW. You know, but I felt like, you know, out of sight is out of mind. I need to get out there and I need to go to work. But it was a lot of sad faces that night. It was a lot of tears, you know, in the locker rooms. A lot of guys never worked in the business ever again after that night. So I feel for those guys, but, you know, life goes on. You just got to be ready. And I think I was more prepared than any of those guys in the locker room.
And you wrestled your first Raw match. You wrestled against Buff Bagwell in the main event of Raw, which it's probably an incredible feeling to go from wrestling on WCW and now you're main eventing Raw. But the match was not that good, and mainly it was due to Buff Bagwell. What was the feeling like when you went through the curtain there and you saw Vince? What was his reaction to that match in Tacoma?
Yeah, honestly, I don't even remember his reaction or anything like that. I just remember the match, you know what I mean? I just remember, not being able to, I always pride myself on being able to make my opponent look better than he ever could look. You know, I always, that's the true professional performer, professional wrestler, is the guy that goes out and make the guy that he's working with look better than he's ever worked with anybody else, you know what I mean? And be able to work with a broomstick and make it look pretty good, you know? And I always thought that I was that guy. I had never had a boring chant, before that night, you know what I mean? I had never, been put in that position right there with the fans, not liking my stuff, So it was an awkward feeling, But I knew it wasn't my fault. Anything like that. I knew I was prepared. I knew it was a minor setback, but I knew it wasn't going to, punish me or anything. I knew my talent was much, much better than that. I think they knew it also.
Do you think that the atmosphere would have been different in the building had it been held next week in Atlanta, since that was the territory for WCW, since they were going with the WCW invasion angle at this point?
Most people need to understand, it wasn't about the invasion angle, it was about the flag being raised, it was a lot of years and a lot of animosity between WCW and WWE, extending the war. You want to end it, you want to raise your flag. And I think people need to understand that. That's why WCW is not around now, still today. There's a lot of prima donnas on the card, a lot of guys getting paid a lot of money. And it was a business decision to pretty much, get what they could out of that thing and then squash it and move on. You know what I mean? Because it was not worth, putting a lot of time into, honestly.
What's your thoughts on the WWE, the current product? We've seen declining ratings. We see, Raw's hover around a 2.0 rating. SmackDown's like 1.6, 1.7. We just had the brand extension, brand split. We drafted Raw. Brand, SmackDown brand. Right now, it's early going in the new era now with the brand extension. But what does WWE really need to do to connect? I think they have their fan base, and they do a good job at promoting their product to their existing fans. But certainly need to grow their audience. We see the numbers. Every time we look at the ratings, we see viewership overall declining. What does WWE really need to do right now to connect with the wrestling fans that maybe have given up on wrestling, have maybe gone into UFC or gone into other genres? What does WWE really need to do to kind of grow their audience at this point?
Wrestling has always been in one of those deals where it's up and down, it's always been that way. I think the attitude era just, spoiled people a whole lot, and they got a chance to see two brands pretty much at war on television doing some crazy, crazy things, But I think right now, I really like the direction that the business is going in, opening the door to a lot of the independent guys. Those guys got so many fans that, didn't want to see them on the big screen. So I think now. With the women, going out there and taking it to another level, we're going to be seeing more women, gravitate to, watching the shows as well, So I think they're doing the right thing. I think what it is, more importantly than anything, is guys like myself, guys like, Steve Austin, guys like Edge, All of us guys, it's a regime change right now. And I think in the regime change, you're going to lose a lot of fans. But I think in the overall, these new guys, these Finn Balor's going to pick them all up, in the long run.
And Booker, when you talk about other, we were spoiled during the Attitude Era. You're completely correct on that, because it's just, it is what it is. You know, people miss that competition. And at one point, you know, a lot of people, including myself, thought that TNA could have been that competition. And you actually went down to TNA in 2007. And, you know, the question is that why did you make that decision to go down there, especially when you were really catching fire with the old King Booker gimmick in WWE, which I was a big fan of that.
Well, I tell you, I had a great time doing it myself. It was a really, really fun time, you know what I mean? But a lot of people don't really understand, you know, how much work goes into, you know, having to be able to go out there and pull something like that off, you know, being world champion at that time, you know, being, you know, on the beginning of the show, sometime in the middle of it, the main event, and then sometimes, you know, every time the dark match at night, at the end of the night as well, you know what I mean? It was really, really a rough gig. It was a rough stage of my life at that time as well, you know, so I needed to walk away from the business. And when I left WWE, it wasn't that I wasn't happy with what I was doing there, but I just knew at that point in time, you know, we had, you know, lost, you know, Eddie, we lost Chris, you know what I mean? We lost a lot of guys, and I just felt like I need to step away from that mainstream scene for a minute. And I intentionally just wanted to go home and sit it out and do nothing. And TNA called me, and they offered me a really, really good schedule and some okay money. And I was like, you know what I mean? I don't want to just – out of sight is out of mind, you know. I don't want to sit at home and, you know, totally get rusty and, you know, not be able to do what I do. So I went there to just, you know, have some fun more than anything. It was 2 years. I signed a 2-year deal, and I was there for 2 years to the date. And, you know, I walked away from it there again, you know. I mean, not that I wasn't happy or anything, but I just knew I didn't want to end my career in TNA, because I went there to help, you know, guys like AJ Styles and, you know, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, and, you know, those guys, and, you know, bring them up to another level. And then when I went to TNA and I saw that they had no intentions of, you know, trying to do that, you know, I got complacent very, very quickly, and I just looked at it as a vacation, you know. And I say, well, my time's up, it's going to be here pretty soon, you know. But they had a great thing there at one point. They arrived, they were moving up big time. Some of the shows we went to overseas, you know, was such awesome shows. I remember working Rhino in one of the shows in Germany, and it was like a soccer match, you know. I mean, half of the arena was hit for him, half was for me, and we literally just looked at each other in the middle of the ring and for a minute and go, wow, what is this? You know what I mean? It was a feeling that I had never had ever before inside of a ring. And me and Rhino, we talk about that all the time, you know what I mean? But I think they lost their the edge when they went away from a six-sided ring. That was huge, you know what I mean? That was their core blueprint. That was their, you know, their staple that made them so different than anybody else when they had a six-sided ring, when they had the X Division, you know, guys going out there doing their thing. You know, the girls were, the knockouts were awesome at one point. You know, but when guys start thinking about their own egos and start thinking about the show, you know, I really don't think, you know, the guy that's running the show, like myself, just say, you know, Booker T, you know, I can't be the champion of reality of wrestling. I can't even wrestle a reality of wrestling in order to legitimize it for my young guys, in order to think properly and focus properly towards what these guys really need, opposed to thinking about myself. I can't be a part of that, you know what I mean? But when, you know, you got a guy like Jeff Jarrett, take nothing away from Jeff Jarrett as a man, but, you know, Jeff Jarrett should not be the champion of his own company. It makes no sense, you know what I mean? So I just think they lost their edge, they lost their focus, and then in the end, they lost all their guys to WWE.
Very, very, very true. And I wanted to ask you, because eventually you made your way back to WWE. You came out there at the Royal Rumble. Huge pop. It was, you know, you and Kevin Nash, you came back that night as well. I mean, how's it been to be back in the WWE family? I mean, you've done some commentary with them. You were inducted into the Hall of Fame. And just, you know, how's that been for you being back with the company?
It's awesome, man. You know, I mean, I'm still just doing what I love to do, you know, more than anything, you know, and still to be a part of the company, you know, just let you know that, you know, I've done something right. Somebody like me, you know what I mean? You know, you don't have to be that good at what you do. You know what I mean? You know, let me rephrase that. You don't have to be you know, great at what you do to stick around. You could be, you know, the best at what you do, you know what I mean? And people don't like you, you're not going to be around. But you could be okay, and if people like you, you'll stay around, you know what I mean? So, you know, people like me, you know what I mean? I'm straightforward, you know, I tell it like it is. You know, I go out there and have fun, you know, on the show. You know, I try to keep myself, you know, young as well, you know, keep myself looking proper, you know, trying to keep up with these young guys, you know what I mean, in certain aspects, you know, but being able to evolve to where I am now is cool. It's awesome to still be in the WWE and, you know, not have to be on the roster, you know, beat myself up every week, you know, so it's really, really cool. I love being a part of WWE. I take nothing away, from, you know, any other company that I've been in, you know, but I tell you, being where I am now, I wouldn't change it for the world.
And the night that you were inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame by your brother, CB Ray, and CB Ray got a huge pop the night when he came out, because it's been years since we saw CB Ray on TV. I mean, how was that for you that night to be inducted by your brother?
That was awesome, man. My brother, we had, you know, we had been going through a feud for like 5 years and not speaking to each other before that night, you know, so it kind of, you know, made everything right all over again. And actually, you know, for him to be inducting his little brother into the Hall of Fame, you know, that's kind of crazy, you know what I mean? That's something I never saw happening in a million years, you know, me going into the Hall of Fame, one thing, and him inducting me into the Hall of Fame, that's totally another, you know, but, you know, it was great. It was a great night for my family, you know, to be able to see it as well, you know, just wish my mother was there to be a part of it. But, other than that, man, awesome, awesome night. Something night you wish you can do every year.
I want to ask you real quickly, Booker, a lot of controversy right now with this Conor McGregor situation. He's spewing at the wrestlers, you know, obviously he's in a shoot business and the wrestlers are, of course, a worked industry, so there's been verbiage back and forth. He had his original spewing at the wrestling industry, and then the wrestling industry responded to him, and then he came back at him again with you know, really going after John Cena, Ric Flair, and some of the others. And he actually called the wrestlers today dweebs. I just wondered, I don't think you responded in the social media frenzy, but what's your overall thoughts of Conor McGregor and just – this whole situation right now?
Yeah, Conor McGregor, I mean, I think it's a joke, really, as far as Conor McGregor calling out guys in the WWE. I mean, but then again, we got the Cruiserweight Classic going on right now. I mean, you know, he's like 145. You know, he might get, you know, jump in that weight class or something like that. But my thing is this, you know, guys should be a little bit more professional. You know, I think he's ticked off guys in the UFC. And I think he needs to, you know, concentrate on his task at hand, and that's his big fight coming up with Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz, I don't see him tweeting out that to Nate Diaz. You know, I don't see him ruffling Nate Diaz's feathers, you know, anything like that. And the thing is, I think, you know, when that fight actually happens, 2-0-2, it's gonna be violent. There again for him. You know, I don't think he's going to be able to last 5 rounds. I don't think jumping up 2 weight classes is smart at all. And the only reason he did it was for the money more than anything. He's a money-hungry little guy. And, you know, we all know that's the root of all evil. But the thing is, I think if Nate Diaz get him to the ground, it's going to be quick. It's going to be fast, just like it was last time. So I think he needs to concentrate on the UFC instead of trying to get a payday in the WWE.
I totally agree with you. I think the whole thing is a work, pretty much, just trying to get attention. I mean, he has, like you said, he has a fight coming up this weekend, and you should focus on that. But I got one final question for you, Booker, and I've always wanted to know this. So you're cutting the promo backstage at Spring Stampede 97, and you say something about Hulk Hogan. What was Hogan's reaction to that?
I got to push after that. Yeah, I'm serious. I mean, Harlem, he got the rocket put on us, you know, after that. You know what I mean? So, It was an awkward moment, actually. You know, my most embarrassing moment. You know, a moment that I wish I could take back and, you know, and do all over again. I felt like I let a lot of people down that night. A lot of young black men who watched the show that feel like it's okay to go out there and say that word. You know, a word that should be eradicated. You know that. You know, I feel like you know, totally should be, you know, taken and put and buried somewhere and never never used again. I feel like, you know, like I said, I let a lot of people down, and it took me a lot of years to actually get over it and, you know, feel like, you know, I could move on. You know, I feel like I've been having a broom, you know, for ever since that time, trying to clean up that mistake. You know what I mean? A lot of people don't look at it as a mistake. You know, a lot of young people these days look at it as an anthem or something like that and celebrate it. And I definitely, don't want that word to ever, you know, be celebrated or looked at like it's a term of endearment or it's a good thing or anything like that. You know, so I just wish it was a moment that I could take back.
And you know something real quick, you mentioned on the Legend special with JBL that you actually spoke with Hulk Hogan after the controversy with Hulk Hogan in the use of that word, and you wanted Hogan to actually go on a speaking tour about that word, and you said you were disappointed that Hogan didn't take you up on the offer.
Yeah, I really was. I was disappointed that he didn't take me up on that offer because, you know, I thought it was a moment that we could have went out there and made a lot of difference and made the issue about the word, you know, and not, you know, the persecution of Hulk Hogan, you know what I mean? Because I feel like, you know, if the word is being said on the radio probably I don't know how many times a day, you know, I can't even let my kids listen to certain radio stations because of it. And I felt like until we could stop saying it, you know what I mean? We shouldn't have a problem with anybody saying it. So let's try to get to the root of the problem opposed to the person that said it.
Definitely.
Yeah, I totally agree. And why do you think he didn't take you up on the offer?
Probably was afraid. You know, maybe his lawyers advised him not to do something like that. Maybe thought it would inflame the situation even more. You never know. You know what I mean? I can't really speak for him or anything. I'm just speculating. I really don't know. But, you know, people are afraid to talk about real issues sometimes, you know what I mean? And maybe he thought it would get him more backlash opposed to helping him, you know what I mean? I thought it would have been something that could have blew over really, really quickly. I thought it could have been something that we could have, you know, literally, you know, got his status back in the company. And, you know, people, you know, a lot of black kids were really, really upset and disappointed, perhaps, when they heard Hulk say that, because we looked up to Hulk Hogan when we were kids. You know what I mean? He was our guy. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, he was, you know. So I just, you know, just feel like he could have really, really helped a lot of kids. You know what I mean? And perhaps changed a lot of the, you know, minds and the way people think. You know what I mean? And really made it a real, real issue. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm about these days. You know what I mean? I talk politics on my radio show, you know, on a weekly basis. You know what I mean? I talk, you know, Black Lives Matters. You know what I mean? I talk, you know, racism issues. You know what I mean? We talk about gays, issues, you know, LGBT. We talk about everything, you know, and that's where I'm at right now, literally in my life, you know, just trying to, you know, help some kids. And I just felt like it was a moment that we, that he wasted, that we could have really, really made a big difference.
As we close with you, Booker, go ahead and plug your Reality of Wrestling, the website again, and how people can contact you if they want to train. And go ahead and also plug your podcast. How can people check it out? Who do you have scheduled coming up? And anything else you want to plug? Your social media, upcoming appearances. I assume we're going to see you this weekend on the WWE Network for SummerSlam.
Yeah, man, you'll see me there, man. I'll be there on Sunday, be flying in. I got a big show Saturday night here for my Reality of Wrestling. My show is called Summer Champions. All the championships will be on the line. Kurt Angle is going to be there as a special guest that night. A little mini main event mafia reunion with myself and Charmel, you know, and Kurt Angle. So it's going to be pretty cool. But definitely you can check out Reality of Wrestling at realityofwrestling.com. Get all the information, you know, about the school, about the show. You can, you know, call us at 281-993-5321. as well. You know, my radio show, Heated Conversation, Sports Radio 610, every Saturday night. You can check it out, play.it, or you can just go to CBSradio.com, and you'll find it, Heated Conversation. Check me out on Twitter at BookerT5X as well. You know, I'm out there, you know, dropping a few tweets on Instagram as well, BookerT5X, you know. So I'm out there doing my thing, man, and I'm going to be doing it for a long time. I still got a lot of energy, still got a lot of work to be done. I just asked the man upstairs to just give me enough time to finish my work.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for your time today, and say hello to Queen Charmel for us. Hope she's doing well as well, and the kids.
All right. I appreciate it, guys.